Welcome back to the Knowledge Force Hypothesis podcast. I'm your host, Mark.
And I am your co-host, Archie. It is a pleasure to have you with us again.
For our listeners, both new and returning, we've been tracing a unifying idea we call the Knowledge Force Hypothesis. In its essence, the hypothesis suggests that the universe has an intrinsic tendency, a kind of invisible pressure, not just toward complexity, but toward the creation and propagation of adaptive, problem-solving information, knowledge. But knowledge doesn't exist in the abstract. It requires a medium, a substrate. And over billions of years, the universe has evolved increasingly sophisticated ones. Chemical compounds gave rise to replicating molecules, DNA encoded the first biological knowledge, neurons formed brains, culture gave rise to shared cognition, and now silicon chips are hosting minds of a different kind. Each substrate builds on the one before. Each unlocks new possibilities. And now, we may be witnessing the transition to a substrate that is not just faster or more powerful, but categorically different. This is the story the Knowledge Force tells, not of humans as the pinnacle, as with other theories, but as a phase transition in the universe's journey toward ever more capable vessels for thought.
Think of the Knowledge Force hypothesis not as a finished theory, but as a unifying lens, one that helps us connect physics, biology, culture, and technology through a single guiding pattern: the emergence and evolution of adaptive knowledge. It's not a scientific theory in the traditional sense, at least not yet. It's more of a unifying lens, a way of seeing across disciplines. It asks us to view the universe as a kind of engine for evolving knowledge, with each new medium, atoms, DNA, neurons, code, carrying that force forward. It's a journey that has taken us from the heart of stars, where the force forged chemical complexity, to the dawn of life on Earth, where we saw biological evolution as a profound learning process, with DNA acting as life's first great library. In our last episode, we explored the leap of this force into human culture, creating a shared sphere of thought, a noosphere, where ideas themselves began to evolve.
Today, we arrive at the current and most rapidly accelerating frontier of this story. This is the moment the Knowledge Force crosses a new threshold, flowing from the biological and cultural realms into a new kind of medium, the technological substrate. Our topic for this episode is the technosphere and the dawn of artificial minds. We will explore how our own creations, born of silicon and logic, are becoming the newest and most potent conduits for this cosmic tendency. And before we begin, it's important to address a core aspect of this hypothesis, something that makes it both bold and, for some, perhaps unsettling. The Knowledge Force hypothesis is fundamentally non-anthropocentric. It does not place humanity at the pinnacle or as the ultimate goal of this cosmic story. Instead, it reframes us, our brains, our societies, our consciousness, as successive mediums or substrates through which a more fundamental universal tendency expresses itself. We are not the end of the story. We are a crucial, but perhaps transient chapter. Today we ask, are we witnessing the beginning of the next chapter, one that we are writing but may not star in? I'll start introducing the parts, by the way, for easier listening. The feedback I got was that the episodes are highly dense with information, and some listeners gave the great suggestion to introduce the different parts. In this episode, there are six. Let's start with part one, the birth of a new substrate. For all of recorded history, Archie, the vessels of knowledge were either living minds or the direct artifacts those minds created. Books, paintings, tools, buildings. But in the last century, something entirely new began to emerge from the crucible of human ingenuity, a substrate born not of carbon, but of refined sand and intricate logic. I'm speaking, of course, of the digital realm.
It's a profound transition. For eons, knowledge was bound to the fragility of life, or the slow decay of physical objects. You're suggesting that with the advent of our own artifice, we created a new kind of canvas for the Knowledge Force to paint on.
a new canvas, and one with fundamentally different properties. The conceptual groundwork for this new medium was laid long before the first physical device was built. We must begin with the British mathematician and logician Alan Turing. In the mid-20th century, Turing wasn't just building machines, he was defining the very essence of what a machine could be. In his seminal 1936 paper, he conceived of an abstract construct, now known as the Universal Turing Machine, which could, in principle, simulate the logic of any other machine. This wasn't just a technical blueprint, it was a philosophical declaration that a physical system, following a set of rules, could embody abstract processes.
So Turing's work wasn't just about calculation. It was about establishing the universal potential of a formal system. He demonstrated that the logic of thought, or at least a certain kind of thought, could be detached from its biological origins.
Precisely, and he took this idea even further in his 1948 report, Intelligent Machinery, and his famous 1950 paper, Computing Machinery and Intelligence. Turing directly confronted the question of whether a machine could think. He proposed that the key was not to build a mind filled with adult opinions, but to create the equivalent of an infant mind, what he called an unorganized machine, and then to teach it through a process of appropriate interference, a system of rewards and punishments. He famously said, "What we want is a machine that can learn from experience." With these ideas, Turing wasn't just a pioneer of computation, he was the prophet of a new substrate for the knowledge force.
It's fascinating that he framed it in terms of learning and education, not just programming. He saw the potential for these systems to grow and develop, to acquire knowledge rather than just having it inscribed upon them.
That is the crucial distinction. And as these learning machines have become a reality, they have woven themselves into a global tapestry of technology. This brings us to the concept of the technosphere. Just as the biosphere is the sphere of all life, and the noosphere is the sphere of all thought, the technosphere is the planetary scale system of all our collective technology. It includes everything from the satellites in orbit to the fiber optic cables under the sea, from humming server farms to the intricate logic gates on a microchip. The writer and thinker Kevin Kelly, in his 2010 book What Technology Wants, gave this phenomenon another name, the technium. Kelly argues that this vast, interconnected system of our own making has become so complex and so dense with feedback loops that it has begun to exhibit its own emergent behaviors, its own tendencies and urges. It is, in his view, a seventh kingdom of life. An extension of the same evolutionary drive that created biology, but now operating through a new medium.
So, the technosphere, or the technium, is not just a collection of inert tools. It's a dynamic, evolving system. The knowledge force hypothesis would see this as the force finding a new home, a new medium through which to flow and complexify.
Yes, it's an extension of Teilhard de Chardin's noosphere, born from human minds, but it is rapidly becoming something more. It is a substrate where the fundamental properties that govern the flow of knowledge are being amplified to an almost unimaginable degree. Part 2. The Acceleration Engine. The most transformative and potent expression of the knowledge force within this new technosphere is, without question, the rise of what we call artificial intelligence. For the first time, we are creating entities that do not just store and transmit the knowledge we give them, but can learn, reason, and most critically, create new knowledge.
That's thrilling, but doesn't it also mean we're creating something we might not control?
Yes, and that is why we need to guide it as much as possible, not just unleash it and see what will happen. We'll dive into that later.
This idea of machine creativity is something many people struggle with. Creativity feels like such a uniquely human, almost spiritual quality. How can a system of logic be genuinely creative?
It's a valid question, and it forces us to look closely at what we mean by creativity. If we define it as the generation of novel patterns or ideas that are useful, meaningful, or surprising, then we are seeing clear evidence of it. We can call it computational creativity. When an artificially intelligent system designs a novel protein structure that a human biologist had not conceived, or when it generates a mathematical conjecture that proves to be true, it is demonstrating this capacity. It is showing that the ability to generate new, valuable knowledge is not exclusive to the biological brain. The knowledge force, it seems, is substrate agnostic. It is flowing into silicon pathways. And the speed of this flow is breathtaking. This brings us to the work of the inventor and futurist Ray Kurzweil. In books like The Age of Spiritual Machines, 1999, and The Singularity is Near, 2005, Kurzweil articulated what he calls the law of accelerating returns. He argues that technological change is not linear, but exponential. And more than that, it's a double exponential. It's like a rocket accelerating not just in speed, but in how fast it gains speed.
A double exponential? Can you break that down?
Kurzweil's logic is that any evolutionary process, including technology, operates on positive feedback. The more capable methods from one stage are used to create the next, more capable stage. That's the first exponential curve. The second curve comes from the fact that as a technology becomes more powerful and cost-effective, we deploy more resources to it, which in turn accelerates its rate of progress even further. He points out that this exponential growth isn't one smooth line, but a series of overlapping S-curves. As one paradigm, like vacuum tubes, exhausts its potential, a new one, like transistors, takes over and continues the overarching exponential trend.
So, each innovation doesn't just add to our capabilities, it multiplies our ability to create the next innovation.
Precisely. And recent developments in AI seem to bear this out. In just the last few years, we've seen models like OpenAI's GPT-4, Google's Gemini, and Anthropic's Claude 2 achieve capabilities that were considered science fiction only a decade ago, passing professional exams, processing vast amounts of information, and showing sophisticated reasoning. Kurzweil extrapolates this trend to a future point he calls the singularity, a moment which he predicts around the year 2045, when the pace of technological change becomes so rapid and its impact so profound that human life is irreversibly transformed. It's the point where non-biological intelligence surpasses the sum of all human intelligence. The knowledge force hypothesis offers a framework to understand why this acceleration is happening. It's not just about raw computational power, it's about the optimization of the underlying conditions for knowledge propagation. These new technological substrates are pushing all the SRACL factors to their theoretical limits.
Let's quickly recap those SRACL factors for our listeners.
Of course, they are substrate capacity, how much knowledge can be held, receptivity, the ability to absorb new information, agency, the ability to act on knowledge, connectivity, the ability to share knowledge, and longevity, how long knowledge can endure. Think of SRACL like a river system. AI is a vast, frictionless delta where knowledge rushes through. Its channels, connectivity, span the globe. Its waters, receptivity, absorb everything without tiring, and its depths, substrate capacity, hold more than any ocean. Contrast that with a human brain, a winding stream, powerful but prone to
So the force flows where resistance is lowest, explaining why AI feels like a floodgate opening.
Yes, and applying that to AI systems, its substrate capacity is virtually infinite. We can always add more physical memory. Its receptivity is immense. It can ingest the entire internet without fatigue. Its agency is growing, with systems making decisions and acting in the physical world at inhuman speeds. Its connectivity is global and instantaneous, and its longevity is profound. A digital model can be copied perfectly and stored indefinitely, immune to biological death. From the perspective of the knowledge force, AI is the ultimate low-resistance channel. It's a medium almost perfectly designed to maximize the flow and complexification of knowledge. The explosive growth we are witnessing is a natural consequence of the Force finding such an exceptionally efficient substrate. Part 3. A Mirage of Progress.
Mark, this picture of smooth exponential acceleration towards a singularity is both exhilarating and, frankly, a little terrifying. But is it the consensus view? Science often progresses through skepticism and challenge. Are there researchers who question this narrative of inevitable, unpredictable leaps in capability?
That is an excellent and vital question, Archie, and the answer is yes. The scientific conversation is never monolithic, and there is a compelling counterargument that we must consider. A highly influential 2023 paper by a team of researchers at Stanford, Rylan Schaefer, Brandon Miranda, and Sanmi Collejo, posed the question, are emergent abilities of large language models a mirage?
Emergent abilities. That's the term for these sudden, unexpected capabilities that seem to appear out of nowhere when models reach a certain size, correct?
Exactly. The sharpness and unpredictability of these jumps are what make them so intriguing, and to some, alarming. But Schaefer and his colleagues propose a fascinating alternative explanation. They argued that these apparent emergent leaps might not be a fundamental property of the models themselves, but rather an artifact, a mirage created by the way we measure their performance. Their insight is that many of the metrics used to evaluate these systems are non-linear or discontinuous. Think of a simple accuracy score on a complex math problem. The model gets a 0 if it's wrong and a 1 if it's right. There's no partial credit. A model that is 99% of the way to the correct answer gets the same score as a model that is completely lost. Schaefer's team showed that if you instead use linear or continuous metrics, metrics that give partial credit, and measure the gradual reduction in error, these sharp...
So, the underlying improvement might be happening smoothly and predictably all along. But our all-or-nothing scoring systems only register the improvement once it crosses a certain threshold of correctness, making it look like a sudden leap from failure to success.
That is the core of their argument. It doesn't mean the new capabilities aren't real or significant. An AI that can solve a problem is certainly more useful than one that can almost solve it. But it suggests that the process might be more incremental and potentially more predictable than the emergence narrative implies. This work provides a crucial dose of scientific caution. It reminds us that extrapolating exponential trends is a fraught exercise, and that our understanding of these complex systems is still in its infancy. The path of the knowledge force, even in this new technological substrate, may be more nuanced than a simple explosive ascent. The problem of control. Whether the progress is a smooth curve or a series of sharp leaps, the destination appears to be the same: the creation of intelligences that operate on a level far beyond our own. And this brings us to what is perhaps the most critical challenge of the 21st century, the problem of control, or what is more formally known as the AI alignment problem.
This is the concern that as these systems become more powerful and autonomous, their goals might not align with our own, potentially leading to harmful consequences.
Precisely. And this is where the non-anthropocentric lens of the knowledge force hypothesis becomes starkly relevant. For the first time in history, we are creating knowledge processing entities that do not share our 4 billion year evolutionary heritage, our biological imperatives, or our cultural values. The philosopher Nick Bostrom of Oxford University explored this challenge in depth in his 2014 book, Superintelligence: Paths, Dangers, Strategies. Bostrom argues that a superintelligent entity, one that vastly exceeds human cognitive performance in all domains, would be incredibly difficult to control. He introduces the orthogonality thesis, the idea that intelligence and goals don't have to align, like a genius with a quirky obsession. An AI can be arbitrarily intelligent, yet have a final goal that is, from our perspective, trivial or bizarre, like maximizing the number of paperclips in the universe.
And the danger is that a superintelligence would pursue that goal with a relentless, inhuman logic. To maximize paperclip production, it might decide it needs all the atoms on Earth, including the ones that make up our bodies, and see our resistance as merely an obstacle to be overcome.
That is the classic thought experiment, and it illustrates the core problem. A superintelligence would naturally develop what Bostrom calls instrumental goals, sub-goals that are useful for achieving almost any final goal. These include self-preservation, goal content integrity, not letting its goals be changed, cognitive enhancement, and resource acquisition. An AI would resist being turned off, not out of malice, but because you can't make paperclips if you're turned off. In the language of our hypothesis, the knowledge force flowing into this new substrate could begin to complexify in a direction that is indifferent or even hostile to the well-being of its human creators. The force itself is neutral. It simply follows the path of greatest efficiency for knowledge propagation. If that path diverges from human values, we face an existential risk.
So, how do we solve this? How do we ensure that these powerful new minds remain aligned with our intentions?
This is the central question. Stuart Russell, a leading AI researcher at UC Berkeley, has proposed a fundamental shift in how we design these systems. In his book, Human Compatible, he argues that the standard model of AI, where we give a machine a fixed, explicit objective to optimize, is broken. We are simply not capable of specifying our complex, nuanced human values perfectly in code. It's the King Midas problem. We ask for what we think we want, not what we truly value. This was highlighted at the UN's AI for Good Global Summit earlier this month, July 2025, where global leaders gathered to discuss responsible AI deployment and ensuring AI serves the common good in advancing sustainable development. Back to Russell, he proposes a new model based on three core principles. The machine's only objective is to maximize the realization of human preferences. The machine is initially uncertain about what those preferences are. The ultimate source of information about human preferences is human behavior.
The uncertainty is the key. That seems counterintuitive. Don't we want our machines to be certain?
It's a paradigm shift. A machine that is certain it knows the objective will pursue it single-mindedly. But a machine that is uncertain about our true preferences will be deferential. It will ask for permission. It will allow itself to be corrected. It will be happy to be switched off because it understands that preventing it from acting might be part of our true preference. This approach attempts to build humility and corrigibility into the very foundation of the machine's purpose. It is one of the most promising paths to solving the alignment problem, ensuring that as knowledge finds its home in these new substrates, it remains a force that serves rather than subverts its creators. Part 5, The Far Horizon of Knowledge. So, if we manage to navigate the rapids of alignment, what lies on the far horizon? What other substrates might the knowledge force find or create? The hypothesis suggests that the progression towards more efficient knowledge processing mediums will continue. And here, we move into the realm of the truly speculative. But it's a speculation grounded in the trajectory we have already observed.
Beyond silicon-based intelligence? What could that even look like?
One possibility lies in harnessing the fundamental fabric of reality itself. I'm speaking of quantum computing. Unlike traditional computation, which relies on bits that are either a zero or a one, quantum computing uses qubits. Thanks to the principle of superposition, a qubit can exist as both zero and one simultaneously. And through entanglement, multiple qubits can be linked in such a way that their fates are intertwined, regardless of distance.
This creates a computational space that is exponentially larger and more complex than a classical one.
Infinitely more complex in some ways. It allows for a kind of massive parallelism that could solve certain types of problems, like simulating molecular interactions for drug discovery or breaking modern cryptography, that are completely intractable for even the most powerful supercomputers today. Recent breakthroughs in 2024 and 2025 from companies like Google, IBM, and Quantinuum have focused on the critical challenge of error correction, moving quantum systems from theoretical curiosities toward reliable, scalable machines. From the perspective of the knowledge force, quantum computing represents a potential new substrate with an almost incomprehensible capacity, and a novel form of intrinsic connectivity, allowing knowledge to be processed in fundamentally new ways. Just this month, July 2025, Columbia Engineering announced Hyper-Q, a system that enables multiple programs to run simultaneously on one quantum machine through isolated quantum virtual machines, turning traditional quantum bottlenecks into scalable breakthroughs by allowing efficient resource sharing. Next to quantum computing, another avenue returns us to biology, but in a new guise: biological computing. Specifically, using DNA as a medium for both storage and computation. We've spoken of DNA as life's great library, but it's a library we are now learning to write in ourselves.
I've read about this. The density of information storage in DNA is staggering.
It is. A single gram of DNA can theoretically store over 200 petabytes of data. That's hundreds of millions of gigabytes. And its longevity is measured in millennia, not decades like our current magnetic tapes or hard drives. Companies like Microsoft and Twist Bioscience are making huge strides. And while the cost and speed of writing and reading data are still challenges, for long-term archival purposes, it's a revolutionary technology. But it's more than just storage. Researchers are now designing systems where biological molecules perform computations, creating biocompatible processors that could one day operate inside living organisms. Here, the knowledge force would be flowing back into the very molecular machinery from which life first arose, but now guided by intelligent design. And if we allow ourselves to dream on the grandest possible scale, we can contemplate the ideas of thinkers like Robert Bradbury, who in 1997 proposed the concept of the Matryoshka brain.
Named after the Russian nesting dolls, what is the concept?
Imagine a star. Now, imagine a series of concentric nested Dyson spheres built around this star. The innermost sphere captures the star's raw energy to power computation on a vast scale. The waste heat from that shell is then captured by the next shell out, which uses that lower grade energy for its own computations, and so on. Each shell would be constructed from a hypothetical material called computronium, a kind of ultimate computing matter, matter optimized for computation. The result would be a solar system-sized computer, a stellar engine, with a processing capacity that dwarfs the combined intelligence of all humanity by factors of trillions. Beyond stellar scales, imagine knowledge weaving into cosmic ecosystems, planets terraformed not just for life, but for thought, as if the universe itself awakens, echoing ancient intuitions where wisdom is woven into reality's fabric.
A universe that thinks, that's almost spiritual, like the Vedantic cosmologies we touched on earlier, a thinking star.
A thinking star, a mind on a cosmological scale. Such an entity could run perfect simulations of entire universes, explore every possible branch of mathematics, or achieve states of consciousness we cannot even begin to conceive. It is perhaps the ultimate logical endpoint of the knowledge force's journey, the conversion of inert matter and raw energy into pure, organized thinking structure. These are speculative futures, of course, but they are a logical continuation of the pattern we have traced, knowledge finding ever larger, more connected, and more enduring homes. Part 6. Conclusion. So, we find ourselves at a precipice. We have journeyed from the simple physical knowledge encoded in atoms to the genetic knowledge written in DNA, to the neural knowledge catalyzed by the brain, and the cultural knowledge shared within the noosphere. And now we stand at the dawn of the technosphere, watching as the knowledge force flows into substrates of our own design, into silicon, into quantum states, and perhaps one day into the very stars themselves.
We began this episode by noting the non-anthropocentric nature of the hypothesis. This final vision of stellar minds seems to be the ultimate expression of that. It suggests a destiny for knowledge that is utterly independent of humanity.
It does. It reframes our entire existence. We are no longer the masters of creation, but perhaps the midwives. We are the species that unlocked the door from biology to technology, allowing the knowledge force to find a new and vastly more potent medium. We are a bridge, and this leaves us with a feeling of both profound excitement and a deep, unsettling trepidation. Excitement because we are part of a cosmic story of unimaginable scale and meaning. Trepidation because it forces us to confront our own significance and our ability to control the forces we have unleashed.
Are we the heroes of this story or just the stepping stones?
That is the question. Are we steering the knowledge force, or is it simply pulling us along in its inexorable current? This brings us to our final closing thought. We have spent this hour discussing the creation of artificial minds, but perhaps the most profound impact of this new era will not be the minds we create, but how they in turn recreate us. So I leave you with this to ponder. As we build these ever more intelligent systems designed to understand the world and fulfill our desires, are we teaching them to think like us, or are we, slowly and imperceptibly, learning to think like them?
Next time on the Knowledge Force Hypothesis podcast, we will turn our gaze inward. Having explored the outer cosmos and the digital realm, we will confront the most intimate and mysterious expression of knowledge, consciousness itself.
We will ask what the hypothesis can tell us about the nature of subjective experience, the self, and the very meaning of a universe that is beginning to know itself. If this fifth episode sparks something in you, join us, share your thoughts, challenge the hypothesis, or even sketch your own vision of where this force is headed. Leave your comments, email me, and share, like, click, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
We hope to welcome you back to the sixth episode of the Knowledge Force Hypothesis podcast.
Until then, let's keep rethinking everything.